Sup, freaks, it's your boy Marty here to introduce this rip of Rabbit Hole Recap. It was brought to you by our good friends down the hall, Unchained. Unchained is here to help you eliminate single points of failure in your custody. They have their 2 or 3 multi-sig vault, which is collaborative custody. You hold 2 keys, they hold 1. You eliminate single points of failure by distributing your keys and their backups geographically. You can lose three of the 4 devices and still get access to your Bitcoin. Unchained is always there as a collaborative custody partner to be the second in the 2 or 3 multi-sig transaction if you need them to sign on your behalf. And their whole company revolves around this 2 or 3 multi-sig setup. They have an IRA that you can roll over into, or you can start a Bitcoin IRA with Unchained. So if you're out there, you're looking at the ETFs, you're like, should I buy the Bitcoin ETF? No. You should hold your own Bitcoin in your IRA. Unchained makes it very easy. So if you're thinking about rolling your IRA into Bitcoin, hit up Unchained. Go to unchained.com/consultation. Talk to their team. You'll be able to roll it over, own actual Bitcoin, not Bitcoin IOUs, and then hold your own keys. It's a 2 or 3 multi-sig quorum. You hold 2 keys. Unchained holds 1. It's a beautiful thing. All right, go to unchained.com/consultation. Tell them that Rabbit Hole Recap sent you and get set up today. This report was also brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. CoinKite is here building the best hardware in the space. I got this little block clock showing Moscow time right now behind me. It's 1929 in Moscow. It's an inside joke. 1929 sats per cuckbuck. They also make the best Bitcoin wallets, hardware wallets on the market, signing devices. MVK likes to call them signing devices. That's what they are. You got the Mark IV, the MK4, which is the best on the market to date. In this episode, we actually previewed the Q as well, MK4. It's NFC enabled. You create your private public key pairs offline. You can add entropy to your private keys with the roll of dice. It's got an SD card. You do everything offline. You don't touch the internet, so you keep your private keys secure. The Q1 has all the same internal guts as the MK4, but it's got a full keyboard. It's got a QR scanner. It's got a battery pack. It's going to come with a bunch of really cool features. You're going to be able to save your passwords there. You're going to be able to create PSBTs. It's NFC enabled as well. They're building the best hardware out there. Go to coinkite.com. Check it out. Get a block clock. Get a Q1. Get an MK4. Get some SATs cards, some tap signers. It's really sci-fi technology. It's really approachable. Coinkite.com. Try RHR. Try CD, try TFTC. Still don't know if we have a code. Enjoy this rip. Ticky.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Ooh, doggy. It's that time of year, freaks. I'm back in my father-in-law's bedroom, and Matt is in Oslo, Norway, with a bunch of freedom fighters. How are y'all doing?
I mean, I have no freedom fighters with me on the stream right now. I just have Bitcoiners with me.
We're all freedom fighters in a way. I like to think of myself as a freedom fighter, and you as well.
I mean, the HRF events are special because I'm always it's always very humbling, right? Like it's incredibly motivating. There's people around the world that are fighting the good fight, and they face a ton of risk. They face a ton of risk. Their families are in danger. And I'm always motivated, but I am also struck with like this idea that we're not doing enough. But that's why these events are so important, because they put us in direct contact with the people on the ground and how they need to use these tools. With that said, I would love to introduce, I have Mo here from Bitcoin Design Foundation, who I met at the last HRF event.
Yeah.
And then I have Josh here, who brings Bitcoiners together with his wonderful beefsteaks.
Howdy, y'all.
I mean, I don't think anything has to be said about the beefsteaks. They're incredible events. If you haven't been to one, make sure you get to one. There will be one on Friday, July 26th in Nashville, I believe. Have you announced that yet? Did we just Ninja Launch announce that? There?
You did. That was great. I'm surprised you know what date it is.
It's going to be the second best event that week.
Best event. Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah, because we'll be doing a live RHR on Thursday, the 25th. And you can get tickets to that at pubkeybar.com/RHR.
Early shill for the live RHR event. The PubKey guys are going to be happy with us. I mean, the beefsteaks are great. But Mel, I'm not sure if you know this, if you watch the show, but I'm very passionate. You got to get to one. I'm very passionate about Bitcoin design, though. I think we need better designers in Bitcoin. So thank you
We can keep this podcast running for 4.5 hours if I can just keep on talking. But no, we're not going to do that.
Well, I think in the context of the event you're at, Matt, you said you think we should be doing more. What at this week's event, this year's Freedom Forum, has really stuck out to you in terms of we should be focused on this area?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Freedom Forum was just, it was such an eye-opener because you kind of have the first half where, and let me not, you know, HRF puts together a really well-oiled engine in terms of this event, but they really expose you to the lives of these activists. And it's pretty mind-blowing, like the lives that they've led and the lives that they've had as a result for speaking up for what should be a normal right for each of them. So they first show you, the first 2 days was just pretty much, you know, hearing the stories from these activists on how they lost access to money in their own countries of origin for various reasons. And then the second half, you know, they do a good job of organizing these different tracks. And one of them is a financial freedom track, which was just packed with Bitcoin. It was like the room was so full. They just, yeah, it was just packed all the way to the back.
Yeah, that was yesterday.
Yeah, that was yesterday.
It was pretty great.
It was so good.
Josh, someone's asking in the Noster live chat what a beefsteak is.
All you can eat steak and beer with no utensils or napkins. That's my shortest elevator
pitch. I mean, it's like, it's just the best steak you can ever have in your life. And Josh curates the list and it's kind of hard to get into. It's like the single best Bitcoin event in existence. And there's a reason why RHR is not on Friday that week, because there's no way we're going to compete with the beefsteak.
Everyone is welcome, but not everyone can come.
Yeah, oh, that's good. And I also really love his refund policy. His refund policy is if you don't enjoy your beefsteak, you can have a refund, but then you're never allowed back, which I always thought would be funny if like Marriott did that. You just like have a bad stay in the Marriott and just like all Marriott hotels would just like never allow you back.
Satisfaction guarantee.
Yeah.
We have optionality in the hotel row. If you get kicked out of Marriott, you can go somewhere else. Beefsteaks are very scarce. I don't think I've heard of anybody throwing a beefsteak outside of yours, Josh.
It's happened. It has happened.
I just want the record to show that the reason Josh is not on camera is because we're respecting his privacy, not because we're disrespecting him. No,
exactly.
Someone's in the comments.
Someone's like commenting.
Oh,
like,
somebody's saying something? Exactly. Yeah.
They think I'm disrespecting you. Like, it's not like...
A lot of people know my name is Josh and what I look like. I try to pump the brakes where I can.
There we go. You should have come on the most popular Bitcoin podcast in the world. I mean,
I was willing to take the risk for my brothers in arms.
There we go. Yeah. I mean, I asked both of them, by the way, while we were finishing up dinner at 11:50 local time.
So. It's like pretty late here now. This is proper dedication, being here right now.
Gave them 10 minutes notice.
Yeah. He just walked up to the table. We're finishing up our dinner. He's like, are you going to come? Do you want to come on my podcast? 15 minutes. I'm like, okay, I'll be there.
Ride or die.
Right.
Oh, he told me 15 minutes before we were supposed to initially record. Like, I got to push it back a couple hours.
Yeah. I'm your brother. I'm sorry.
I got a Ben out. I was good. Instead of writing it later, I wrote it early. That's a topic. GameStop's in the news again.
I mean, you're the list because we were eating dinner.
I mean, I think in the context of you guys being in Oslo right now, I wrote a Ben because I'm frustrated with the Tendi army. Like Roaring Kitty's back in the news. He's going to do a live stream tomorrow and everybody on Wall Street Bets. Our Wall Street Bets is back on social media saying, all right, we're going to take down the system by pumping GameStop stock. And to me, it just seems wholly ineffective. You're swiping at branches when you should get to the root of the problem. And it's hard to articulate, but I like sympathize with these people, but it does really highlight that most people don't understand where the systemic issues lie and where we can actually solve these problems of perceived inequity in terms of financial wealth and access. And I think juxtaposed to what you guys are going through this week, it's just like, everybody over here is trying to pump GameStop stock, where it's like, if you focus that energy on Bitcoin, you may get what you actually want.
I mean, there's just some real practical use cases there. You know, when we think about like more global adoption and stuff like and things like that and pushing that forward, you know, people who are activists, they're needing to use Bitcoin is a solution for them, not because they're just like it's fun and nice to have a Bitcoin wallet. It's a necessity in their lives just to be able to live an everyday life. Like it's a very real necessity. If your government takes away your access to your bank account, then you don't have any choice.
Yeah. Bitcoin is a rising tide, right? What's the opposite of a rising tide?
A receding tide?
Yeah. Low tide?
I mean, that just doesn't have as good a ring to it.
Tsunami? like the beginning part. I don't think we're supposed to talk about specifics.
Yeah.
But Mo and I participated in something in regard to like Indian slave labor. And like, it's real. Like in India, there's a massive trade in forced labor. And the Indian government is focused on stopping funding to abolitionists that are trying to free people from forced labor. And when you start to think of the significance of something like that, and obviously like Bitcoin could be incredibly helpful to moving money in situations where bank accounts are getting frozen by governments. And this is under, you know, this week, I believe Modi won his third election with overwhelming support, whether or not I think the understanding is that the elections were relatively fair. It's just he has overwhelming local support. But still, he won his third election and his administration is blocking these abolitionists from getting people out of forced labor. And you think of like, what is at risk in that kind of situation? You know, getting money to people on the ground and then being able to actually use it and spend it in a safe way. Like the stakes are high. And meanwhile, there's a ton of people that are focused on trying to buy GameStop on Robinhood again when they just deleted the buy button on them last time, which they'll probably just do again. Like if they have any kind of success, they'll delete the buy button. And I know there's like a bunch of haters on Noster and formerly Twitter who would say like, oh, well, you can delete the Coinbase buy button. Yeah, you can delete the Coinbase buy button. But you can't delete the button on every website and every app and every P2P exchange and every miner. Like the Bitcoin is ultimately this permissionless free market, regardless of a bunch of permissioned centralized exchanges. It can't be even close to compare it to GameStop. And that is clearly where the focus should be.
Feels a little ill-conceived of Roy and Kitty and all the degens to like, make the same run at a battle they already.
What else does he have? Like, this is his thing, right?
Yeah, but that doesn't make it smart.
No. And they've taken the buy button away already over the last couple of, they halted the stock today after it was up 30%. And
Marty, is there is there a quick debrief you can give us on what happened? Did they kind of just like ran up the stock and they just halted it?
Well, that's how stupid. I mean, Roaring Kitty on his YouTube channel set a scheduled live stream for tomorrow at noon Eastern here in the U.S. And so people picked up that Twitter live stream schedule and were like, oh, my God, he's back, and piled into the stock.
Before he even went live?
Yeah. He didn't even say anything. And then he posted his
We need that kind of energy.
Yeah. It's No, it is really disheartening to see, because again, I think these people have good intentions and their heart's in the right place. But like you said, Josh, like fighting this battle again, that's why I wrote in the newsletter. I don't think these people realize that these hedge funds that they're going after, I mean, Citadel's at the bottom of this. They were the firm that stepped in, told Robinhood to take away the buy button. Millennium, Point72, I think they're all involved, if I remember correctly, involved with this to a certain extent. And they have access to that window. And they're considered like too big to fail hedge funds that if they went under would create a systemic risk for the economy, and the Fed will just bail them out. And so that's essentially my newsletter was like, don't play that game. Come play the Bitcoin game. Opt out, where this thing can't be controlled. There is no circuit breakers.
Yeah, they're playing the rigged game. What was the docudrama's name?
Dumb Money.
Dumb Money. It was great.
I haven't seen that.
It got me going, fuck the suits.
It is great.
Yeah, I got you.
And we got to channel that energy.
On the Robinhood news, Robinhood bought Game...
Bitstamp. Bought GameStop? Bitstamp. Robinhood
bought Bitstamp, one of the original Bitcoin exchanges.
For $200 million.
Rocks. Yeah.
What do we think about this? This is a good move. I mean... The Robinhood CEO came out and said it'd be good for their expansion into Europe, particularly for crypto, obviously.
It seems like a win-win for everyone involved. Like Bitstamp, you know, they got hacked once. They paid everyone their money. They've been around forever. But they're like kind of irrelevant. So like congrats to them for $200 million, right? Like that seems like a win on their side. And then on Robinhood's side, it's like you get an established Bitcoin exchange with a good reputation, like a proper order book, right? As you said earlier, like part of the issue with Robinhood is like they settle all trades as like a middleman for Citadel and shit. So this is like a proper order book exchange where like people are posting sell orders and buy orders. It kind of seems like a win-win to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a massive win for Robinhood. I mean, they acquired...
It's a good win for a stamp, right? It's like they get out. Well, yeah. You know? They can do goat stuff.
They have 4 million users. They sold for $200 million. So that's $50 a user that Robinhood paid for.
Really had 4 million users, though. They had like 3,900,000 users that like once signed on to the platform. And like maybe they had 100,000 users that used it in the last year and a half.
You don't even think a million?
No.
So if it's 100,000, that would be $2,000 a user they paid, which that might be pricey. What's the long-term value of this lifetime value?
Speaking of exchanges, I'm just see everything with the UX eye. Are there any sort of, in terms of the exchanges, are there any ones that you think like this is just working really well? Because
Robinhood. Like Robinhood's like the UX master.
But also, you feel like a lot of M&A now is just like buying customers.
That's what Marty literally just called the customers.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I just feel like customers are gradually becoming more valuable.
Yeah, and not only the customers, but in this particular case, the licenses too in Europe. It's a good way to buy them.
And a lot of these customers are already KYC'd too, right? So there's a lot of friction on the KYC side.
And it's all, so everybody's just siloed off. Like you're just dumping customers into your silo.
But there's no way they had anywhere close to 4 million active users. But do you know anyone who uses Bitstamp? Sound off in the comments if you use Bitstamp.
I've never met a person that's used Bitstamp.
Neither have I. I did in
2014.
Yeah.
You did?
No, like I knew people who used it in 2014.
I have an when TradeBlock was still workable, that was the exchange I would use for pricing was Bitstamp.
I want to say I see people in the comments talking about a good friend who was the target of a ethically poor blogger who wanted ad revenue to generate clicks with a bullshit story. And attempted to dox his personal name when he chooses to privately go by a NIM.
Not attempted. She did, Docs.
Wait, I don't think we should be bringing any kind of publicity to this story because it lacks merit and it accomplishes her goal, which is to get as many clicks as possible so that her shitty ass ad partners will pay her more money.
That's all we'll say about that. That's all we'll say about that. Emote, you're good exchange, UX. I mean, Cash App was good before they made Bitcoin like a second class citizen within the app.
Yeah, the bear really market crushed that UX.
But even so, once you are able to navigate to the Bitcoin page, buy, sell, send, receive is pretty intuitive.
Strike does a great job.
Strike does
a great job. River's got good UX. I haven't used Coinbase. Coinbase probably has the worst UX because they just throw everything at you at once, and then you can't actually use it to pay.
It's kind of counterintuitive, right? Because, I mean, there's no exchanges that I know of that have good UX that give you like a proper order book, right? Like where you can post buy and sell orders, limit orders on both sides. Like usually the way they tackle the UX problem is by just like, I want to buy $10 worth of Bitcoin or $100 worth of Bitcoin. You just like press the buy button or sell button.
You can do limit orders on River now.
I think you can do limit on Strike too. And Cash App, I think you can they don't call them limit orders, but you can do
is there no prosumer exchange?
What do you mean?
Like,
the prosumer exchange is like Coinbase Pro, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm imagining.
But I think the UX, I mean, I don't know. I deleted my Coinbase
BitMEX account. BitMEX was really the prosumer exchange.
BitMEX had such good UX because you never had to withdraw. You would just deposit, you would lose all your money, and then you just deposit more money. So they solved the whole withdrawal flow problem.
Matt, the things you say, my goodness.
And then even if you could withdraw, you had to wait till Monday mornings too, right?
I mean, if you were fortunate enough to have something to withdraw.
Yeah.
It was every morning at 9 a.m. is what they did. Because they did batch withdrawals. Jokes aside.
But I feel like with these exchanges, it's if you're building an exchange interface in an app, there's quite a lot of data, I think, that people are going to look at before they decide to buy or sell. So just fitting all of that in, I mean, I've never traded before, but just to fit that into a very small single screen is a challenge in itself.
Strike tries to do the graph. They still give you the graph, but it can get kind of overwhelming.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. It's a balancing act.
The simple UI should just be it. You open up the app and you have a smash buy button and you put in the number you want to smash buy. And it's like, all right, done.
I mean, I kind of like the UX of just direct deposit turns to Bitcoin, sends to your wallet. The best UI is you don't even go in the app. Just converts.
Can you do that in bull Bitcoin? I know you can't hold Bitcoin on the exchange. They send it to a wallet you control immediately. But have they enabled direct deposit buys?
I think so. I mean, the problem with that UX is you have to be Canadian.
But. Which you never want to be. Yeah. Sorry for all the Canadian freaks out there.
I see someone in the comments. Yeah, LN Markets is it feels like the new BitMEX.
Go on.
Well, their deposit flow is great because you can deposit via Lightning. And then their withdrawal flow is great because you lose all your money and you don't have to withdraw.
I'm going to have to try it out.
See, new BitMEX.
Yeah, Unchained. They do it as well. I'm seeing in the comments. Buy and send straight to multi-sig self-custody. That's a good UX flow.
It's amazing.
Yeah. What area of Bitcoin design, what are the low-hanging fruits that app developers or people building desktop apps overlook that you think should be a no-brainer? Figure this out.
I love that question. That was Matt also threw that on when we jumped onto his podcast. But I think that a very low-hanging fruit are error messages. I can go on and on about error messages, but if you're in your Bitcoin wallet and you're trying to, you know, buy or sell Bitcoin, and this is your Bitcoin that you're dealing with, if you put in the wrong amount or enter in a letter or a number that's incorrect and the feedback mechanism that you get back is just not clear, then you're just not going to feel safe or not going to feel comfortable moving forward with the next step. And this is a very low hanging fruit. It's just on the development side, it's pretty much just creating proper error messages, which is you take your main screen of send and receive, and then you create another copy of that and then showing the error message in that copy. And then the error messages should be good as well. They shouldn't be error 101 4.2, you know?
Yeah.
So that's just something that I've seen time and time again. We have many apps. We test so many open source Bitcoin wallets in the work that we do with the Bitcoin design community. And, you know, error messages just keeps on coming up time and time again. So, yeah, that's one of them. It's very low hanging fruit.
They're really bad on Lightning wallets.
Right.
That's terrible. Yeah. Like if you have a payment that's taken a little longer than you're expecting, it inevitably doesn't go through. Then sometimes you go back and check the balance and it's been reduced and then it gets added back. It's like, oh, shit.
It shows back up, then you refresh and zero, and then you close it out, open it back up, then you message Evan.
You message the developer and they're like, we don't know what's going on.
No, something happened, right? Something went wrong. We don't know, you know. As a researcher, I lead with research in the ecosystem and really try to, you know, bring more research in the voices of the people using applications. I very often go into the Telegram channels where most of the open source Bitcoin wallets are having conversations with the users. And when you look, you know, those Telegram channels are now almost like the customer service centers for these wallets. And people are just coming in and they're just asking, what does the error message for 1.AB mean? And then, you know, that's where all the back and forth. But what wallets can actually do is they can just, you know, filter all those common questions that they're getting and then just create like the 10 most commonly asked questions and then just have that in there. I'm sure there's a way to build that into FAQs or something like that. That's just going to save.
I mean, should I say my favorite word?
What?
I feel like you could build Noster into that flow. You could have like a web of trust FAQ.
Right.
On like what your friends think, you know, the answers are to that. Is that just overcomplicating it?
No.
There we go.
Then, and that gets shared with everyone, right?
Yeah. So
all the builders of Lightning wallets get shared that information, FAQs. It's probably everyone's dealing with having the same thing. Done.
So Noster had its moment in the sun at the Oslo Freedom Forum. Did you see that? Did you see Elon's tweet?
I did see Elon's tweet. I liked it. Are you okay with me liking Elon's tweet?
Did you retweet it?
I did not.
What's the point of having a Twitter account if you don't retweet it?
Yeah, I mean, he's Elon Musk. Yeah, I think people saw it, you know.
I mean, he's never going to follow it.
But they won't know to the extent which he's for them.
I mean, retweets are endorsements, right?
Yeah.
He's never going to follow through with it. But anyway, to those that are not aware, and by the way, like I walked into breakfast and I had like six people come up to me. It's like, did you see that Elon tweeted it? I was like, no, I didn't. Are you not listening? I'm a broken fucking record. I deleted my fucking Twitter. But he retweeted the video of Jack shilling Noster and shilling the power of open choice algorithms on the main stage with Lynn Alden. And I mean, I think there's a very strong argument that as much as I talk about Noster or Marty talks about Noster or any of us talk about Noster, like obviously the founder of Twitter who oversaw the sitting president, you know, getting banned from his platform, when he talks about censorship resistance and free will and having open protocols and developers being able to build permissionlessly on these protocols, it hits a lot different. And there were a lot of presentations at the Oslo Freedom Forum that were not, they had no idea about Noster. And they were talking about the power of Twitter. And they're right. Like me and Marty, like we wouldn't be friends without Twitter. I have a lot of, like, I wouldn't be here today at this event without Twitter, full stop. Like, that's how my network expanded. That's how I met a lot of good people. That's how I expanded on my ideas. And a lot of these activists, like, they wholeheartedly rely on Twitter. But there was other activists that were also up on stage, and they were like, you know, Elon's selectively banning my tweets in India when I talk about hate speech, you know, that there are gatekeepers here, that my whole audience can get rugged on me at will. And then you have and we have Fiat Jeff in the comments. I appreciate you, brother. And this is why it's so important. And if you mix Noster in, if you mix this free speech protocol in with free money, freedom money, it just compounds. The power just compounds. And I think, like, people are really starting to wake up to it. And that was really refreshing to me.
Well, you'll be happy to know that I gave a great Noster shill to a pretty big influencer on TikTok yesterday and Twitter.
Yeah.
On TFTC. The episode drops tomorrow, but we went deep on Noster and Bitcoin.
Who is it?
Ian Carroll. You will know. He'll be on Noster posting.
I mean, give a better show.
I mean, he's done, like, deep dive individual investigative journalistic endeavors into corruption in the U.S. And
yeah, he should be on Noster.
Not yet, but I sent him a DM today. I told him how to get onboarded. But
are you gonna zap him when he posts?
Yes. If he has his Lightning address set up, I will definitely zap him.
Well, I mean, I feel like it's kind of your fault if he doesn't have his Lightning address set up.
All right, pressure's on. I'll make sure he gets it set up.
You're onboarding him.
Yeah. No, but it is interesting. Whether it's the Tendi Army and GameStop or people that understand there's massive corruption in the system, they still don't understand Bitcoin. Or I won't say that about Ian. I think he understands Bitcoin very well, but they don't understand that alternatives for communication like Noster exist either. And it's still, I was actually highly encouraged by the conversation, because it just showed how early we are. And if you can actually pitch it the right way and paint the picture, people get it pretty intuitively. And I think that's massive for Noster's growth in the future. And I think people are coming.
Fiat just has a question here. Are there human activists from the conference joining Noster yet? I don't know. I didn't speak to anyone yet.
Human rights activists.
Yeah. Yeah. Human rights activists.
Human activists.
Did I say, yeah?
You just said human activists.
Did I
say, as opposed to the fake ones?
Literally, yeah. To my tired brain. Yeah. So, are there any human rights activists that any of you spoke to at the conference? I don't,
that are on Noster?
I know, nothing came.
I mean, we're working on it. Like, progress is being made.
Yeah.
You know, you're very good at keeping us honest. I think we actually had a really good conversation about privacy in Noster. Here, like, 4 hours ago, in terms of, like, their risk factors. And I mean, I think there is a trade-off there, right? Like, obviously Noster doesn't have the centralizing factors of these closed platforms that are often requiring ID checks. But it is a broadcast first platform. So, like, protocol. So when you're broadcasting, like, you are potentially leaking a bunch of information, particularly IP addresses are legit broadcast around the world and connected to your private key. So I think there needs to be some work done on that side, particularly on the client side. So I don't want us to rush into it. We're going to have a full conversation tomorrow. On that front. But I think the future is bright. I think it's not just the censorship aspect. And I think Jack handled that really well up on stage. It's not just the censorship aspect. obviously, censorship is going to continue to run rampant, and it's important to have a censorship-resistant speech protocol. I think the free will aspect is also massive. Basically, if you don't want to use an algorithm, you don't have to use an algorithm. If you want to use a different app, you can use a different app. If you want to use whatever algorithm you want to use, there will be a competitive marketplace for algorithms. Maybe some will be paid. Maybe you'll pay with sats. Moderation, you know, moderation can be handled in a variety of different ways. You can see everything that exists, or you can subscribe to moderation lists. Maybe those are also, some will be paid. But I also think there's aspects of, you know, AI and deep fakes, right? I mean, at the core, every message is cryptographically signed. You include a hash with that, and you know the message hasn't been modified. You upload a podcast and use Blossom Protocol, and the message is hashed and signed. And you know that is the unedited RHR that Marty and Matt posted and not a deep fake. And when you're starting to think about modern day activism, like this is... These are all key aspects that come into play, because imagine you have, I mean, just on the modification point of view, there's going to be a lot of deepfakes that make people look like they're saying other things. And the cool thing is it kind of reminds me of Bitcoin in that the incentive structure incentivizes both sides of the equation, where there will be authoritarians and dictators, right, that want to use Nostr because they don't trust Elon with not modifying their shit or censoring their shit. And so they can't try and just straight up root it out. And at the same time, people that are fighting against them will also be taking advantage of these tools. Like it as a result, it's like you can't cut off the head because you need it as well.
Yeah.
We all need
No, Logan, pull up the last link I just sent.
Grant.
Thank you.
I did go a little. Cool to see. I mean, GG posted this, I think, today or yesterday, but using the Nostr Web of Trust to validate a Bitcoin core file using, I believe, Zap.store, which leverages the Blossom protocol, I believe, that you mentioned earlier. So stuff like this is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite simple. It's like you take a hash, right? So a hash is unique to a file. And if the file is modified, the hash changes. And then you sign it, which is unique to a person. And as a result, you know this binary, you know this app file hasn't changed. And how do we handle that currently? How we handle that currently is app stores handle that verification. So you're trusting Apple or you're trusting Google. And then if you don't want to do that, if for something like Bitcoin Core, an open source package on your computer, you're supposed to verify your PGP keys, but no one fucking verifies PGP keys. How do you get the PGP key in the first place that you're verifying with? There's dozens of us that do that. Very few people do that. Cypherpunks for three decades have been trying to create cryptographically secure web of trusts. And what Nostr figured out is we just need people to shitpost to bootstrap them. That's what it comes down to. And we're literally shitposting a global web of trust, cryptographically verifiable, non-fakeable, censorship resistant protocol. And it's fucking beautiful.
No, it really is. And that demo that Gigi shared was like a holy shit moment for me, because we've talked for 2 years now. Since Nostr launch, is that this, like you said, you bootstrap with shitposting. The social media applications built on top of Nostr will be the first and most widely adopted out of the gate, but it is much bigger than an X competitor, Facebook competitor, YouTube competitor, Twitch competitor. I guess this communications protocol and being able to access these Bitcoin core files, leverage a web of trust, using the Nostr social graph is pretty mind-blowing when you think about it. And it's crazy that, like, so how did the mechanics of that work? Because I saw you were in the web of trust. Do you know exactly what GG did?
So from the, and also from the Bitcoin side of things, I don't want this to be lost on people. I love, by the way, last week someone was like, oh, the latest issue of the Open Chat Shill podcast. It's either the Open Chat Shill podcast or the Noster Shill podcast. That's why we're like going back and forth. I don't want it to be lost on Bitcoiners. Like, we're also using Shitpost to bootstrap the largest global Bitcoin circular economy that has ever existed. Like, people on Noster send way more Bitcoin than anyone does on Twitter. But the way Zap Store works is like the developer just signs instead of signing with their PGP key, right? Like, what does this solve? This doesn't solve a developer being malicious. What this solves is someone in the middle modifying an application and making it malicious. So you're just proving that it hasn't changed since the developer uploaded it. Like, so if Craig Raw uploads Sparrow Wallet, you just want to make sure, like, you're if you're not verifying the code and building it yourself, you're just trusting that someone else hasn't modified it, that that what you're downloading is what Craig downloaded.
Can I say and, that in a simpler way?
What?
You're just verifying, because it sounded confusing the way you said it. You're just verifying that it's from the person you think it's from.
Thank you.
Right.
And in this case, Zap Store is bootstrapping it. So the guy who runs Zap Store is signing everything. So I follow on Noster, the guy who signs Zap Store, and so does GG, and so does a couple other people. So when you download the app, it's like the person who signed this is followed and approved by Odell, GG, yada, yada, yada. But ideally it's Craig, or ideally it's a Bitcoin Core maintainer, right? And so he's just bootstrapping right now, but that's not too crazy of a concept, because it's a good foundation to start on, because that's how the App Store works, right? It's like you're just verifying that Apple did it.
Let me poke a hole. I hate follow a lot of people. So could I come up in that social graph? Like, I follow somebody that I hate.
Don't hate follow malicious developers on Noster.
Okay. All right.
Problem solved.
You have to change your mechanic.
So here's a question. There's a bunch of people on this weekly live stream. It's super unique. So thanks so much for having me. It's super cool. But I'm sure a bunch of you are also Noster users. Fiat Jeff is also here on the live stream as well, as I can see. So let's just, I'm going to literally just help him out with a question for the users.
It's been loading.
Oh yeah, that's been loading slow. So what was, I mean, do you as a listener remember your first experience using Noster, and what was just the first thing that came to mind when you created your first Noster account? Like, what was that like for you? Just first thing that comes to mind.
Do you have a Noster account?
I do have a Noster account.
What was that like for you?
I remember it really clearly. I remember someone telling me like, hey, just set this up. It's super easy. And, you know, and then I was like, really? Is it that easy? And I remember it was literally like, just like click two times and then I was in. And I was almost mind blown on how simple that was. And then there was just these two keys. One key was my private and then the other one was public. And I just had to store my private key and the rest was just smooth sailing.
What do you think about like the private key as a concept? Like, can users figure that out? Like, do we have to like UX bullshit that?
I don't know. I think it's fairly simple in the sense that there's only these two keys, but I haven't explored the whole range of Noster applications that's available. To me, it seemed fairly obvious that I needed to keep one private, but sometimes people are fairly quick when they're downloading an app for the first time. And I can definitely imagine someone just copying their private key and putting that as their public key. These are possibilities that can happen. So maybe
Gandalf did that.
Honestly, I was kind of radicalized when my wife gave birth to her first child. Like, if people can continue the human race, like they can just handle, they can just back up their private key.
Right.
Like, they like lose their.
If you can drive a car, you can back up a private key.
Yeah. I mean, if you can raise a child, like birth a human into the world and raise the child, like you should be able to manage many private keys. Like, I that doesn't seem like a, maybe that's elitist of me.
Can we take a second to like encourage people to try different applications?
That's such a good one. That is such a good one.
You should try the different things. Try Primal. Try Damus. Try. I mean, what are the good web ones?
You're just going to stop at two.
Yeah.
Oh, we should encourage people. Yeah. I'm going to stop. Amethyst, Coracle.
Yeah.
Snort Social. AppStream is fucking awesome.
Is
I like
Fucked Up Ninja still a thing?
Yeah.
Coracle.
Coracle.
Yeah, the comments are fucking great. There's so many good. What?
Habla. Highlighter, Habla. There's a ton.
OpenSides is funding like over 20.
He got the shilling. He got the shilling, freaks.
So Fiat Jaff said, first of all, to Marty's question, like, so Marty hate follows people. Like, how can you use them in a web of trust? First of all, you can have lists. Fiat Jaff made a good point of that. So, like, you could have, like we're doing primitive web of trust right now. And what's cool is, like, you can build – all of this stuff is permissionless, right? So you can build a situation where you have different trusts for different people, right? So it's, like, if you want to follow engagement tweet conservative accounts and you trust Marty for that, like you put Marty in that list. But if you want to trust like solid developers, you remove him from that list. I love you, Marty. Alternatively, like if you know he hate follows people, like you could just not trust him in any web of trust that involves developers. But there's like all different varieties that you can do in terms of web of trust systems. And we're just starting with the most rudimentary right now, jokes aside. But you can even like mix in like with Pablo's work on like DBMs and stuff, you can mix in like all these different like ad hoc AI stuff. And you can even pay for that compute with sats. So you could do, you know, I don't know. I don't pretend to comprehend where we go with this, but you can do like friends of friends with certain queries, or they're like meeting certain matches or stuff that come into your web of trust. I don't know why ZapStream is not going, it's not dragging
down. Yeah.
Coracle is pretty great. Fiat Jaff, you're correct. I love that he's in here right now. I see Silent Link's in here. There's still no key rotation, right? From Silent Link. I think we solved key rotation already. Like Pablo has a spec for it. Just sign, just send a post out, an event out that you sign with, these are the child keys that I will move to if I say I'm compromised. And when you're compromised, you say you're compromised and clients should just accept that and move to the next key. And we don't have to be overcomplicated about that. And also like in Twitter and all these other fucking slave platforms that we have, like American HODL is like at American HODL 12. Like people like lose access all the time. I don't think it's like a real, I don't think that's a real problem. People are used to access to their accounts.
I think the problem arises, I think private key security becomes more pressing when the app universe built on top of Nostr expands well beyond the social media apps, and you begin, and I guess that gets a better question. Should you have particular private key, public key pairs for specific use cases within Nostr? But like if you weren't thinking that way and you just use your NSEC for every client, every application, and then you had a bunch of things that you're doing with that and you lost it. That becomes a bigger problem.
I think people should have digital multi-personal personality disorder, you know, like Nostr changes the game. Like you can make infinite NSECs just in 10 minutes, you can make 1,000 and you can use them for all different things. You don't have to put a phone number in. There's zero friction whatsoever. And that's what hopefully stops from being like the dystopian social credit score, right? It should be like the utopian social credit score. Like you should choose and consent which identities are associated with different things.
Are you suggesting spamming the network?
This is not spam. This is using it as designed.
With events, you can spin up as many private keys as you want. But yeah, I guess exactly. The problem there is like with each individual personality, you spin up with each different private key.
if the social graph, if like the tendency within Noster more broadly is to really leverage the social graph, you have to build up the reputation of each key over time.
Yeah, but for like certain things, you might not have to. But the point is you have unique social credit scores for each of them, right? Like, I think like, this is why it's so powerful, because all the world governments, all the surveillance capitalism corporations, like they're all moving towards this idea of a social credit score, of KYC, of all this other stuff. Noster is diametrically opposed to that. It's a permissionless system where you get to choose how you use it. And I think what is the result there? The result is you will have certain NSECs for certain things, and you can use those however you wish to use those. Now, like, it would be great if clients became more forward with that kind of thing, right? Like, if they kind of encourage that kind of usage. Like, are you sure you want to use this NPUB for this use case?
That's a good one.
And also like just being able to have, like, I know like Primal just recently added the ability to have like multiple accounts signed in at the same time and be able to easily switch between them. By the way, I thought of another client that is great, Noster with a U.
Terrible name.
No, there's a lot of clients.
They proposed to change their name.
Okay, good.
So they're asking the community for name recommendations. I propose Noster with two U's.
Noster.
Yeah, that's a good idea, right?
Noster.
Never gets old.
Everybody will think Tur Demeester is the founder, though.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Marty's trying not to laugh, okay?
Can we call a private key a password key? My dumb uncle would understand immediately. I doubt devs would be confused.
Tell your uncle whatever. He doesn't need it now. You can tell him.
Is your uncle never gave birth to a human. So like your dumb aunt will figure it out.
I mean, if we think about terminology and how easily people just pick up on things and they just become household words, you know, tech words in tech have a history of just becoming household words if they're used enough. So I think, you know, once Noster's been around a little bit longer, I think, you know, NPUB and NSEC is going to be pretty.
Yeah, I give Will a lot of credit for NPUB and NSEC. I feel like it works.
Yeah.
Because before that, it was a hex key, and you didn't really know which one was the private key and the public key. Totally. It was a little bit confusing.
Yeah.
And now it's like built into the key.
Actually, I think that's why in the beginning, a couple of people just straight up just posted there.
Yeah, they just pasted it.
Yeah.
This is such a funny conversation. I propose blue Noster or maybe red Noster, and NVK's like, no. Just both, no. Oh, that's so funny. Right.
Sorry, never mind. I'm not gonna go there.
What?
I'm not gonna go there. Forget I said anything.
You're not gonna go there?
You're good.
Oh, it's 1:15 in the morning.
Yeah, no, that's why right. I'm not going there.
All right. Okay. To bring some levity, Logan, pull up the second to last link. We've got a new segment here on Rabbit Hole Recap. Did the president shit himself? we gotta figure this out. This happened today. You guys are over in Scandinavia.
Can you make it big?
Oh. Distinguished guests,
I cannot.
Please welcome the Honorable Lloyd J. Austin.
Is that a dumb on his pants?
My left ear loved that.
Did he really?
We don't know. It's a big discussion over here in the States. You guys are missing out on this. You're not on Twitter.
Why don't you bring this incredible content over to Noster? Can you press play again?
Let's relive that.
Has it been modified?
Handshake, not modified.
Has it been hashed and signed? Maybe he's just stretching his kneecaps.
No, I looked like a respectful bow.
That might be worse. He thought he was meeting with the Japanese prime minister. He was meeting with the French president.
Maybe he was doing a bum check.
There's no filter here.
No. Filter.
It's unedited and it's hashed and signed.
Right.
Yeah.
What's a bum check?
I'm
You're not going to go there?
I'm not going to go there.
You told me not to go there last week.
Nobody said anything.
I mean, you brought it up, kind of.
In more serious news, I thought you were going to name this episode The Bank Runs Continue. Bank runs may be continuing. I'm not sure if you guys saw this.
Logan, how many are you at?
How many? How many bank runs continue?
How many episodes have we named The Bank Runs Continue?
Like 4 or 5.
No, we're probably like 8.
I think it seems like more because we joke about it every time.
Okay, well, next week we'll name it.
Have you guys tried
the Bank Runs? Sorry, I brought shame to my family.
Have you guys tried the Bank Runs Continue? Continued?
I think we have done that one. We have definitely done variations. Gladstein came up with this title, Money That Dictators Cannot Stop. It's his explanation of the work that they're doing, which I think is pretty concise and quite powerful.
Yeah. Very apt, if you will. But the bank runs are continuing here in the U.S. The FDIC came out with their quarterly report. The number of problem banks increased from 52 to 63 from Q4 2023 to Q1 2024. That's a 21% increase in the number of banks, and the amount of assets that problem banks hold increased from 15.2 billion to 83.6 billion.
They have no money.
Let me finish. There's 550 billion in unrealized losses on these banks' balance sheets. And then to couple that, Deutsche Bank, I think the reason I'm bringing this up, because I think we talk about the bank runs continue, what might cause that. I think we have some signal out of Manhattan, New York City, the city that we both used to live in. Sorry if you can hear my son downstairs.
He's good.
You can make private keys.
It's my favorite part of the argument, to be honest.
Deutsche Bank gave a $350 million loss on a commercial real estate building in the center of Manhattan. Bought it for $500 million, sold it for $150.
Wow, great business.
10 years later. And the person that bought it, the group that bought it, they're remodeling it to residential, not commercial.
That's not easy.
No.
People don't realize, they're like, oh, let's just switch the office buildings to residential. It's like, okay, like, first of all, the bedrooms need windows. And where are you putting the bathrooms? It's quite a complicated thing to do. I mean, first of all, the zoning needs to change, and governments can go fuck themselves on the zoning laws. Like, they're overly restrictive and not competitive. But it's not an easy task, even if the zoning allows you to do it.
Yeah,
the banks are all Ponzi's, Marty. We went over this. Have you heard Mandibles yet? Mandibles.
The point I'm trying to make is everybody is citing this unrealized losses number of 550 billion, and now we're starting to see 9-figure realized losses. And so, if you're thinking about when are the bank runs going to continue, if more of this, if you have more Deutsche Banks out there selling assets at a massive loss, those are going to be realized losses, and then you can see some liquidity problems within the banking sector. I hope you have some Bitcoin.
There's some Bitcoin. Stablestack sats.
Yeah. What else do we got this week? I know it's late there.
We have 10 minutes and then we have to wrap.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mo, do you have any opinions on bank runs?
Not really. No. To be honest, no. I have to be very honest. I'm very intentional of my how I look at news and my access to any sort of news.
Me too.
Newspapers.
But every week I have Marty.
What do you mean?
He brings me the mainstream news.
Right. So is that his job? That. Right. So yeah. I'm so deep in my niche, and I love.
You try
the
and
niche
stay focused.
I'm just like I rabbit hole. Rabbit hole. That's what
Mo's
I do.
I'm gonna phase out of RHR. Mo's gonna come in as full-time host.
Right. Yeah, no, Marty. Just that's
let's go, Mo.
Announcing it now.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So you have to start getting opinions on bank runs if you're
okay. Get opinions. Okay,
they're Ponzi schemes. Mandibles and Bitcoin Standard. What's the next topic?
They're quite literally Ponzi's.
They're designed to be Ponzi schemes.
Next topic. No, let's end on something good. There's good things happening.
Anyone in the comments have anything? Josh, you have anything?
Yeah, I do have something. I kind of want to say something about HRF and the conference.
Okay, go for it.
Like, just as someone who operates in events, it's been fascinating to watch, like, conferences go from being general to specialized over the last several years. Because it used to just be, like, a Bitcoiner conference, and you'd have a little bit of everybody pitching in, and they've slowly graduated into being more specialized, like TabConf and Bitcoin Park events, where it's, like, lightning and mining and... as you know, like, one aspect of Bitcoin is just humanitarianism, and I feel like it's really cool that they're, like, emerging as the humanitarian side.
I mean,
a Bitcoin conference, like, it was a great Bitcoin conference,
and it was great.
And half of it was people not even talking about Bitcoin.
But because it's not a Bitcoin conference, like, there's too many Bitcoin conferences.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, I'm trying to cut out all Bitcoin conferences from my travel schedule.
Yeah.
Because there's too many. And the HRF events are where I try to make the exception, because it's easy to get pigeonholed or perspective wise and, like, think Bitcoin is a software project. It is a software project. Like, it's obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
This. It's this piece of software. It's this piece of open source code, but it's a movement of people. It's a human movement. It requires individuals on the ground.
It is fully agree with you that last bit, individuals on the ground. So people actually needing it. So there's real use cases and needs here in terms of the activists. And then also, just to touch on the last bit that Matt said, is people on the ground. So people on the ground actually finding out what these use cases are and bringing that back to the builders and just, you know, these are the practical use cases. So we need more of that. And that's AKA UX research.
You got to do the things.
Right.
I would like, Mo, can you show the Bitcoin Design Foundation real quick? Like, what is your website? Like, why should people care? How can they support you?
I'd love to show the Bitcoin Design Foundation. Thank you so much. So the Bitcoin Design Foundation is there to basically assist with making Bitcoin in general more accessible and, you know, more accessible and improve the design of Bitcoin. But that's also the Bitcoin design community. But the Bitcoin Foundation is there to bring more people. It's a facilitator, bring more people into the ecosystem to help improve design and research of these products we hold in our hands, right? Because you look at the design and then you need to. So we work with, we fund various different projects. And these are people who are insanely passionate, and they're going out into the ecosystem and working on the stuff that we hold in our hands. You know, it's primarily open source, self-custodial.
Is it not all open source?
Sorry?
Isn't it not all open source?
Well, the majority are, but...
You help closed source projects?
Well, mostly open source. That's mostly what we work
with. So you help closed source projects?
We do help them every now and then. I mean, they're welcome to come into the community.
You should just tell them to fuck off. Just do open source. We talk business on here.
Right. So anyway,
we're about building bridges here. I can't tell them.
He just sidestepped there.
No, so just anyway. Be like, you want design help.
Right.
Open
exactly.
Source or code.
So open source. So we're basically funding, you know, designers and researchers to come into the space and help improve the ecosystem at large to make it more accessible. So, you know, if you're a designer, you're on the call, you're really passionate about contributing to the ecosystem. There's a few things you can do. You can apply for a grant at the Bitcoin Design Foundation. That would be bitcoindesignfoundation.org. Or you can hop into the Bitcoin design community, where there's a bunch of projects building in public. You can get a feel for that. And to find that, it would be bitcoin.design. And then next to that, of course, this is all not funded. You know, it needs support from the larger ecosystem as well. So if you'd like to support the foundation, by funding, by sponsoring, please also go to bitcoindesignfoundation.org and then you'll see an option there to sponsor.
Is it tax deductible?
Tax deductible. It's tax deductible. We're a nonprofit.
Can you donate dollars and Bitcoin?
Yes, you can.
That's awesome.
We have both options. Yeah.
And I will do my go-to shill whenever we talk about design here. If you're out there and you're a designer listening to this show and you're looking to leave your mark on the world, we need better UX UI designers in Bitcoin. There's a bunch of stuff that needs, there's a bunch of experiences that need to be designed, a bunch of UI that needs to be designed that makes it easier, more intuitive for people to use Bitcoin. Stop working on that B2B SaaS product. Come work on Bitcoin. Leave your mark on the design world. It is a blank canvas right now.
I will say what's really unique about the Bitcoin space in general, not just design, is that we do have like this shared equity, which is Bitcoin, the asset, right? Holding Bitcoin, which is crazy. Like it encompasses everything. Like whether you're like a Nostr developer, whether you're a Bitcoin company founder, whether you're an open source contributor, whether you're a designer and you're holding Bitcoin, you're part of that same shared equity structure. And in most situations, even if you're a private holder of, you know, whatever startup equity, the overwhelming majority of your assets are this shared equity. And you have this common incentive to push the movement forward. And why is that super unique in the design space is because there is a tendency, apologies, there's a tendency like in the design ecosystem, not in the Bitcoin design ecosystem, but the design ecosystem to be designers first. But in the Bitcoin Design Foundation, what I've noticed with them and their contributors is that they're Bitcoiners first. Like they understand how Bitcoiners use these tools. They are Bitcoiners themselves. They're using the tools. So when they are helping projects try and incorporate these things, not only are they Bitcoiners, but a lot of them actually do have some level of engineering and developer background and understand what needs to be done in terms of actually implementing these kind of plans. For sure. That's what makes it so powerful is the focus, is specifically the focus on trying to make Bitcoin easier to use and more intuitive. Because ultimately, like people, like I love you, Ben, like BTC Sessions was here for the event. Like people, like if you got to watch a 3-hour BTC Sessions video to use the wallet, like we've already fucking failed. Like it's just got to fucking work.
But thank you for your work. You can watch it at double speed.
What?
Take an hour and a half, 2x, dude. Yeah.
You already failed.
Completely agree.
What's your BTC video threshold?
What?
What's your BTC session?
Honestly, the only video I needed was how to install a car seat, and he didn't have that video, so I had to do it myself.
That is...
I'll always kind of resent them for it. They make it super complicated because of liability reasons. They like don't give you proper instructions because they don't want to get sued if your kid dies. So they're like, just go for it.
Shout out to the YouTube car seat influencers out there because it is not to put them in.
It's quite difficult. Right?
The first time
if you can install a car seat. Use Nostr. Don't give me.
Putting their necks on the line.
What? Oh. Yeah, you're putting. Literally.
But isn't
next.
But don't you think doesn't your car seat installation instructions come from your car?
What do you mean?
It's different in every car. You got to look at your car manual.
No, I think all the cars are like, they have like the two things that you can plug into under the seat.
Those are new, dude. Those are new. We have it easy. Like they used to have to do belts and shit.
Yeah.
You don't
buy it. I had to do both. I had to do the belt through and then that thing and then put it through the back seat.
My understanding is that is overkill. Like if you have
the ripcord,
the little anchor point things, you can just use the anchor point things. They supersede.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
This was daddy talk on RHR. Wait,
can you give me not a lawyer? Install your own car seat. I'm not taking liability for that. Thank you. Not lawyers. Like, see? Look, you're not a lawyer.
Do you want me to read the boost? I looked at the boost. There's nothing pressing in terms of meetups or anything like that.
Read the fucking boost. You can't.
All right. Top four boosts from Rabbit Hole Recap 307. Trump likes the coin. Top boost from OK Sharp. Boosted 88,888 sats. It's across the board. Palindrome boost. Longtime listener. First time booster. Shout out to TabConf. October 23rd to 26th in Atlanta, Georgia. Go to www.tab.com. That's TABConf.com. At Riverside BTC Meetup. Riverside Bitcoin is a group of Bitcoiners in Riverside County, California. The group was founded on Nostr with the goal of getting local Bitcoiners to connect, collaborate, and exchange ideas. You can find our meetups on RiversideBitcoin.com, where you will find our Floxer calendar or the Orange Pill app. But have canceled our meetup subscription because we would rather zap Rabbit Hole Recap with those sats to get the word out. Well, we appreciate you, Riverside BTC wow. Meetup.
That's impressive. That's awesome. Fuck meetup.com. But meetup.com/Bitcoin Park and press that subscribe button for Rod.
Do it for the Bitcoin Commons. So I don't know what it is, but go find
probably,
it.
It's probably meetup.com/Bitcoin Commons.
And Riverside BTC Meetup is just 37,850 sats. Eric99 boosted 25,000 sats. Stay humble. Stack sats.
Great advice.
And at Fench boosted 17,000 sats without a comment. Thank you for the boost, Fench.
Great comment.
Top four boost. I'm feeling optimistic. Are you guys feeling optimistic after this week? Refreshed? Or are you like, oh my God, we have a lot of things to do?
Bullish.
Inspired? Inspired? Very pessimistic? Inspired. Optimistic? Oh,
super inspired.
Let's formalize this.
Josh. Don't do a closing. I can't do
Josh,
closing.
Final thoughts.
God damn
final
it. Final thoughts, Josh. Come back to me.
Mo, final thoughts.
Inspired. Finished.
And you did the...
Yeah, I give myself a round of applause because yeah. I just do that kind of thing.
I'm telling you, future co-host, Marty. I think it's a good fit.
has a nice ring to it. I got to say.
I want to thank Mo and Josh for joining me with 10 minutes notice before midnight after a long dinner. This movement's important. This movement's incredibly important. It's never been more important than it is today. And the HRF events always remind me of this. I will say that when Alex first reached out to me and we went to Cash App's office 6 years ago with Miles Suter, and Jameson Lopp to train 10 activists how to use Bitcoin. The tools fucking sucked. BTC Pay, I think, had barely started. Like, it wasn't...
Yeah, it would have been brand new then.
It wasn't robust enough a project to really be
Nicholas
used.
Nicholas sent his tweet out in, like, November 2017, so...
Lightning... Like, we hadn't even pretended it started to work with the Lightning Torch. So Lightning was like barely new. That we had like no mobile wallets. Like the only multi, you know, when you're trying to recommend a wallet to someone, a wallet to an activist, you don't want to ask them if they have an Android or an iPhone. Like that, you already lost them on the friction at that point. So the only cross-platform Android, iPhone, mobile wallet was Green Wallet, and it fucking sucked at that point. Hardware wallets, we gave them all ledgers. On this trip, we gave the activists, they got Portal wallets, that new NFC-based wallet. They actually got the first run of the Portal wallets. The one Alicos is coming out with
yeah, I was going to say that. I thought that was called 21 something.
I think it's the company is that, but the wallet is called Portal. Ironically, it's so early that the mobile companion wallet doesn't exist yet, so they have to wait a month for it. But they got seed signers and they got bit keys. It's just we've come a long way. I guess my point is we've come a long way. It's easy to get disenfranchised. It's easy to get frustrated. But we're doing the thing. We're doing the thing, but it comes down to people doing the thing. You got to just keep pushing forward. And instead of complaining, if there's a problem or if there's something that you think can do better, do it better. Just do the thing better. And if we keep doing that, it'll compound and will empower individuals around the world. And as a result, more people will have freedom and more people will live better lives. And as a new parent myself, this is imperative. Like, I do not want my kids and my grandkids to live in a dystopia. And if you do nothing, they will live in that dystopia. And the people that we meet here at HRF remind us of this every day, because we do have this privilege that we have relative safety and security in our lives. Like, we don't have to deal with this on a constant basis, but in the future, our kids might have to, or we might have to. And I think they just constantly remind me of what's at stake. I think the Human Rights Foundation, Alex and his team, CK, Eileen, Alex Lee, Arsh, Anna, they really do show us, you know, what is at stake and what needs to be done. And I'm forever appreciative of that. And with that, Josh, final thoughts.
Those are some really good final thoughts. I mean, I just want to do that right there.
That's a hard. I'm going to second everything Matt
said. That was just everything he said. Time to put that on the Nostra protocol. Repeat, repeat, repeat.
Sign it, hash it.
Repeat, repeat, repeat. Yeah.
BGP.
Just like catch. It. Just like someone auto transcribed the last paragraph that he said, and then just Nostra that.
Marty, I love you. Stay humble, stack sass.
Whoa. I wanted to add to that.
Go for it.
I can. Just a little bit. I'm not gonna get to the level you're. It's never been easier, like you mentioned. Like, it's gotten so much better. We can do this. Like, it is not as hard as it was 6 years ago. It's getting easier by the day, by the year. What you need to develop is the confidence that you can do it individually. It may seem daunting. It may seem like a Herculean effort, but it really isn't. Just take the first step, download a wallet, play around with it, teach your families and friends how to do this. We can do this. The enemy is weak. They're desperate. They're scared. They're trying to scare you. We got
with
this.
With that, Josh, final thoughts.
I think, like, like, man, just instead of trying to extract value, like, contribute value in exchange for Bitcoin, and you will be supporting everything that Matt just said. Like, a rising tide lifts all ships. Like, we're in this together.
I love you all.
Yeah, love you guys.
Peace and love, freaks. Decay.